true crime podcast where best friends and next-door neighbors, Willow and Lillian, spill the tea on murder, mysteries, and other things that go bump in the night. So get your favorite teacup ready, and let's get into it.
Welcome to Cruelty Podcast. This is Lillian, and with me is Willow.
Hello.
Hello, patrons.
Hi, patrons.
We're doing it.
We are here. we are doing it.
We're trying our best.
Yeah. So I was going to put up a poll for this episode, but I had to cover this one. So sorry I didn't ask for your opinions. I'll do that next time.
I usually like to do a poll, but sometimes a case will get me.
Well, I couldn't really figure out what I wanted to do, but I've been wanting to do this episode for a very long time. It's been on my list. I've been about to do this as a Patreon episode for like most of the year, but I finally actually really looked into the case, and I was like, holy shit, I gotta talk about this. So
there we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
So I actually had a lot of fun researching this case. Listened to a lot of 90s and early 2000s hip hop.
That's the way.
Which I fucking love.
Yes.
And I'll link some music that is pertinent to this case in the description of this episode. So,
or in the comments, because I write the description.
The comments, yes. So, yeah, this is the episode of Big Lurch, aka the Cannibal Rapper. So, trigger warnings for this case. Drug use, cannibalism, descriptions of mutilations, and domestic assault and violence. So yeah, today's episode is on the rapper Big Lurch. He almost made it big after entering the hip-hop scene in the 90s and early 2000s, working with artists like Mac Dre, E-40, Mystical, Tupac, the RBL Posse. I love E-40. I love Mystical. Mystical was such a wild person.
I know.
I loved his flavor, too. He's just,
Listen, nothing beats 90s gangster rap.
You cannot
fucking convince me otherwise.
And honestly, Big Lurch was like, there is a lot of true crime people that have talked about this this case, and I've always referred to Big Lurch as like a small time rapper, or like, you know, a would have made it kind of person. He was dope as fuck. Like, I don't know what they were talking about. He was he was really good.
Man, listen, there was nothing like mid-90s fucking going to like the 7-Eleven or a gas station and buying a CD out of a motherfucking, like a tape, not a CD, but a cassette tape out of a motherfucker's trunk.
This is the guy that would have them in his pockets. Like he, he definitely.
And that was some of the most amazing music ever. It was a great time.
Even today, like my soul feels right with a good, like solid, low, slow, heavy beat. Like, you know that, like, that 90s beat was just, like, so fucking chill and laid back and heavy.
Dirty sounding. Yeah. Scratch good. Yeah.
But it was just chill. It was, I don't know, there's something to it.
It's the best music to get high to.
Yeah.
Period.
Absolutely. Period. Yeah. So, yeah. His career pretty much ended in 2002 with an incident involving PCP that left him naked, covered in blood, growling like a dog at police as they arrested him for killing and eating someone. But this is something he doesn't remember, and literally all of the hip hop scene would never forget. So nowadays, especially, you know, in the hip hop scene, the name Big Lurch is pretty much unanimously synonymous with cannibalism. Like, you say Big Lurch, that means cannibal. And like I've even heard it in a lot of songs like that I listen to now. Mm-hmm. They'll bring up this case. They'll bring up, you know, eating a person on Sherm, and that's what this case is about. So Big Lurch was born Antron Singleton on September 15th, 1976 in Dallas, Texas. He fell madly in love with poetry at a very young age. He started writing poetry at the age of 7.
Wow.
And poetry very quickly grew into songwriting, and he was really good. It was apparent to not just himself but everyone around him that he was meant to be a rapper, and that's pretty much all he ever focused on. He would write all through adolescence, perfecting his rhymes on the schoolyard, and he eventually ended up starting rap groups with his friends, and then would go on to perform professionally and at local open mic nights at the age of 15.
Damn.
In 1990. So, yeah, he was very serious about this. Absolutely serious about this. Like, his entire life. This is the only thing that he was made to do. In 1995, when he was about 19, he became a father to his son, Antron Jr., who he absolutely adored. He is an amazing father. His son absolutely loves him. There's some pictures of him as a toddler, like, looking up to his dad. Like, and I just say this now because throughout his life and throughout his career, he was still very, very family-centered. He did, you know, continue to be a big part of his son's life. He just didn't talk about his son. So it's basically just mentioned that he has one, and that's about it. But he keeps everything in his personal life very, very private. Because, of course, I mean, he's in, you know, a pretty violent scene. You know what I mean?
It is.
So, especially his particular scene, and we'll get into it. But, yeah, he did not talk about his son or have any reference to his family whatsoever. He kept that very private and safe. So he originally went by the name G Spade, but as he literally grew up, the name Big Lurch stuck, because by the time he was fully grown, he was a towering 6'7".
Damn.
6'7". I'm 5'1 and a half.
I dated a dude who was 6'8".
That is insane to me.
It is really big. I mean, a big person.
Compared to you, that would probably look a little bit more normal. Because you're very tall.
I'm 5'10 and a half, but he was still almost a foot taller than me.
I don't even think I would come up to his waistline, and I don't want to picture that outside of a G-rated. Anyway.
just, and so, yeah, that was big too.
I'm
doing it for you. Yeah, he would.
I just assume.
Tall, lanky guys.
I mean, they have big hands, big arms, big legs. It would look weird and disproportionate to not have. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Big Lurch obviously got his name from Lurch, the Addams Family, right?
Yeah, big, tall dude. Yeah.
And he had this very deep, bassy voice that went along with his physical demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And this just added, like, musically, this added, like, a very, like, funky, groovy, like think, like, old school funk. Like, like the Funkadelic, or, like, like, the music, like, he's in a lot of tracks just in the background, just being like, oh, yeah, boom. Like, it's just, it adds so much funk and soul
depth,
to the track.
Depth.
Yeah. So he was actually a really
those,
big commodity.
Like, deep, like, slow beats,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. He was a vibe. Like, I'm just, like, he was a fucking vibe. So, as we know, especially in the hip hop scenes, especially in the late 90s and early 2000s, location had everything to do with your sound.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Like, beats and compositions were very specific to your area. It was like a turf war for sound. Like, mm-hmm. I was very, like, it was like almost like a micro fixation of mine. Like, I had to know everything about the hip hop scene whenever I was little. Like, I would watch BET all the time. I would really get into, like, who is coming from where, who their producers are, you know,
who they're beefing with.
What, and I could listen to, you gave me any track.
You
especially
can,
from
yeah.
there. You could pinpoint exactly what city they were from,
mm-hmm.
or at least what area they
what
were
coast.
From. What coast. Right, right.
And I know the
right.
coast got all the attention, but you're forgetting Midwest, because, like, coming from Chicago and shit.
That's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, Chicago had Common and Twista.
Yeah, they did.
St. Louis had Nelly and Chingy. New York had Biggie. L.A. had Snoop and Tupac. Like, you could, like, each place had a very
and southern
specific
rap
sound.
Don't forget the southern rap.
Well,
too
in Texas, where he's at, this is the home and land and time era of DJ Screw, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's the chopped and screwed era. So everything is lean, right? Everything's purple.
Hell right? Yeah.
So you've got artists like Paul Wall, Swisha House, you got Big Mo, Pimp C, Lil Kiki, and all of these people are just really heavy on that like Texas chopped and screwed, laid back, heavy lean sound. And, you know, everything's slowed down and these lyrics are about lean, obviously.
Obviously.
That's all they're yeah. about. But also sex, drugs, booty, getting money, mm-hmm. right? But Big Lurch wasn't about that. Like, that wasn't his sound. He was more into like the deep funk West Coast
hell yeah
vibe, and Samesies. He wrote more on the darker side of life. Like, he had that West Coast Cali like kind of happy vibe,
but it wasn't happy lyrics.
It was not
saying.
Happy lyrics.
Oh, I like he that was, juxtaposition.
He was writing about serial killers, horror movies, vampires, and cannibalism.
Well, you know, that reminds me of 3-6 Mafia, which I was a huge
girl,
fan
I'm
of.
Just, girl, you have. It's like you peeked into my notes. Like, that's literally about what I'm
like,
about
look,
to talk
when
about.
I tell people that
fucking
I was a...
love 3-6 Mafia, dude.
Chew my fucking arm off to make the escape. Yes. And listen, I look very white bread. I'm a very tall lady. I'm goth and witchy. Mm-hmm. And I was in my teens. So, like...
It was so funny because, like, your music taste is not something that anybody could just guess upon seeing you. And I remember, like, one time we saw each other at the gas station. Like, we just bumped into each other. And you drove off. And you were just bumping some shit that I did not expect you to
probably
be bumping.
Like, it was I remember that. And it was probably, so like, I was, Her Majesty or, like...
my mouth was agape. I was just like, I got wow, five on that's it. My I'm best friend.
People think I'm going to be listening to, like, Sisters of Mercy and The Cure, and I fucking do.
Yeah.
But or Enya. I do listen to Enya. Enya slaps. I listen to Yanni. Fucking, I am on a, like, a new age trip sometimes.
Yeah, but nobody can guess.
No, never. But it has to have a certain vibe, and if it has the vibe, regardless of genre, am playing it. And that does include fucking country music, although anything before 1975 is not going to be listened to by me.
I am so the opposite. Like, I have a very niche, very particular sound that I like, and it's predominantly black and brown women of hip hop. That's it. And most of them are like their own producers and their own songwriters, and like it's just the most narrow.
See, and I'm
niche.
Not a big fan of R&B. I like Sade quite a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
She's got a fucking beautiful voice. But like, for the most part, Love Salt and Peppa back in the day.
Yeah, of course.
But like, yeah. I don't know.
I listen to mostly female rappers who speak in Spanish. That's
yeah,
my
it's
thing.
So far from
that
anything I've listened to.
That's my thing.
Although I used to listen to a lot of Spanish rap, but yeah. That was a long time ago.
But this... Getting back to the case, this is definitely, we were into this scene for sure.
Oh yeah, I probably would have loved this music.
And
honestly.
It's funny because like I remember when I was in high school and I was dating my oldest son's dad, he had a Brother Lynch CD in his truck.
Brother Lynch.
So Big Lurch was wildly inspired by Brother Lynch.
Obviously, yeah.
Clearly with like everything that he's rapping about and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So Brother Lynch was actually signed on to Tech N9ne's record label. Did you know that?
Yes.
I feel like it was at a distant memory of mine, but I had to re-remember that with this case. Strange Music West. He spearheaded this subgenre of hip hop centered around subjects like, you know, popular true crime cases, gore, horror films, glorifying serial killers like Dahmer and Bundy, characters like Freddy and Michael Myers. He specifically called this genre Rip Gut.
Yeah.
Rip
okay.
Gut.
Yeah.
Yes,
I remember that
yes.
shit.
But it later evolved into horrorcore. He says, I am not a horrorcore artist. I am a Rip Gut artist. But if you want to call me a horrorcore, that's fine too. But he basically spearheaded the movement of horrorcore. Mm-hmm. And other artists over the years that, you know, carried the torch of horrorcore would include ICP, of course.
Of course.
Tech N9ne, of course. 3-6 Mafia and Eminem.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Eminem definitely has a few songs like that.
1,000%. So 3-6 Mafia and Brother Lynch being the forefront of the movement in the early 90s, Big Lurch took extreme inspiration from them. Brother Lynch actually said in an interview, which if you haven't watched any of his interviews, you have to. This guy is a character for sure. Yeah. Like, he was wearing the Hannibal Lecter mask as a hat.
Yes.
Fucking love it. It looked really cool as a hat. Like, I'm just saying, like, that's dope.
Nah, Brother Lynch was cool as fuck.
Yeah, he's cool as fuck. So Brother Lynch actually said in an interview that he was drawn to this style of rap through his love of meat.
That sounds like something he'd fucking say. That's so dumb. I love it.
That's like straight off the bat, the opening line of the interview is like, what drew you to horrorcore?
Meat.
He's like, I like meat. He said, that's my favorite food.
Oh my God.
And as long as he saw the meat being cooked, no matter what kind of meat, he would eat it. That was his answer.
You know, that a brother after answer. my own heart.
The interview asked him if he had ever eaten human flesh. He said he hadn't, but he said if someone cooked it for him in front of him, he would definitely eat it.
Well, I got him beat then.
He said, but with some seasoning salt.
Yeah, you can't unseason it.
Says fun. You.
I don't take no unseasoned
you
meat.
You ate.
Oh, it was unseasoned. Yeah.
Well, it was probably seasoned with sweat.
Bit salty.
Disgusting.
It's salty, yeah.
Not the kind of seasoning salt that I keep in the cupboard.
You know, I'm a forever memory in that guy's heart.
You better be.
And a scar. Yes. And a story. Do you know how much I love that?
I hope. I would just love to be a fly on the wall for every time somebody says, oh, how'd you get that?
This crazy bitch bit a chunk off of me.
So, Brother Lynch, obviously, really leans heavily into this horrorcore rip gut style. He wears, like I said, the Hannibal Lecter mask. He like just is completely decked out in like memorabilia. His album art is like, I never like really paid attention to album art, at least of his, but he has album art of like all different types of horror style scenes, from laying in a coffin and there's one called Eat Now, where he's dressed as a butcher, just covered in blood and holding knives. And I watched a bunch of his music videos. They're all basically like short horror films, like all of them. They're pretty well done, especially for the time. And it really is just like a short film
I'm looking
horrific.
At his album art now. It's real funny.
Yeah. He has songs like Meat Cleaver, which talks about torturing and murdering people, and has a very graphic music video. And, yeah, like his videos just really, really go hard. And it shows through Lurch's music and his album art that he took quite a few notes from Brother Lynch and wanted to clearly expand on this genre. Big Lurch really wasn't making it anywhere in Texas, especially because of his very specific sound. So he moved to LA in the mid-90s and started working in studios with a bunch of various artists like E-40 on his track Record Haters. I don't remember. Oh, God. I listened to that song so many times that now I can't remember how it goes. But that one went pretty hard. He also worked with Tupac on a track called Hard Labor, Mac Dre on a track called Fire, while also working with various other artists as well as his solo work. So he stayed pretty busy in the studio. Mm-hmm. While in the studio, he formed a group with two other artists that were also there a lot recording their own solo tracks. Artists Doobie Baby and Rick Rock. The group that they formed was called the Cosmic Slop Shop. And honestly, the Cosmic Slop Shop, now it only had one album and it flopped. But if you listen to a lot of the artists that came up around this time, they all know who Cosmic Slop Shop is. All of them. It's like part of like their learning and upbringing. Mm-hmm. It's like part of their curriculum, if you will. A lot of people base their learning of sound and beats through this band, as well as a lot of other bands that came up at that time. So Cosmic Slop Shop had like more of a really funky California vibe. It took them about 2 years to write their first and only album, which was released in 1998 called Da Family. They had one charting hit called Sinful, which this song fucking just slaps, dude.
I feel like I've heard it. I feel like I've heard that
so
one. Okay,
so the
sure.
hook is very gospel-y, and yes. I'm not gonna sing it, but it's like, it's Jesus. It's like so good, and
it's super good.
I really could sing it. I really could, but I won't. I even wrote down the lyrics just in case I wanted to, but I'm not going to. But yeah, the hook is very gospel-y. It's very catchy. It's very easy to sing along with. And it's a whole fucking vibe. And I don't know why it flopped so hard. Like, it was really
good. Bad timing, probably. I think by 1998, the rap scene had died down a bit. It would come back in the early 2000s with Eminem and shit.
I mean, the scene was
like Puff Daddy and all that crap.
Yeah, it was kind of like centralized around just like key figures because the pop scene had taken over.
Pop had become way more prevalent, and then we got into the 2000s era of boy bands, Britney Spears.
Because a lot of the hip hop artists in the late 90s started releasing pop albums pop singles.
Well, they wanted to cash in on the clearly growing trend.
Exactly.
Don't blame them, get your bread. But like rap really fell off for a while until Eminem, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like saying that because I'm not a big fan of Eminem.
I love Eminem.
I just can't.
I mean, I think he's such a douche now. But
he's
like,
such a fucking douche. That's my problem.
When he blew up, like little Willow would be on the kids' playground by myself, just rapping to myself.
It was just, to me, it just wasn't the rap that I grew up with. So I was just like, who is this dumb skinny white boy? Go away.
Right.
It wasn't a good, like, I was still, like, too nostalgic, I guess, for the like, mid-90s gangster rap.
Absolutely.
I just didn't really want to buy anything.
Because it was fucking intellectual.
It was protest music.
Extremely intellectual.
It was fucking protest music.
And I've gone on rants about this. I don't know if I've done it on here, but I've gone on rants a lot in my life about this specific topic because, and Snoop Dogg even said this, and it's because they were writing for the radio. They were coming from a place where the only way that you could make it out of your, you know, crackhead fucking flop house that you were living in, the terrible situations that you were in.
You had to dig deep and make art out of that.
Well, no, you had to mold yourself and present yourself in a way that was radio safe, radio friendly. So in order to talk about gang banging and selling dope and all this stuff,
you had to get clever with that
shit.
You
had to be smart. You had to be clever. You had to use words correctly and
make up new
pictures. You know, you couldn't say fuck. You couldn't say all these things. You couldn't say the things that we're able to say now. So you had to write poetry and dance around what you were really saying.
Yes.
And that is fucking beautiful.
Like 187 on an undercover cop.
That's
come on
right.
now. That's beautiful.
That's right. You can say that on the radio.
You can.
What you can't say on the
radio
is kill
an undercover
cop. Yes. Yes,
that's what it means.
Exactly.
And so, like, I don't know. I really feel like people never talk about the depth and social justice movement of 90s gangster rap.
Absolutely.
And that's what I loved about it is I recognized it immediately as protest music.
Game recognized game.
It wasn't about fucking hoes. I mean, sometimes it was.
I mean, it definitely is, but that's not what it was centered around.
That's not what it was. No. But it was like, they were painting this picture of what life was like for them so we could get invited in so things can change.
Yes.
And I really think that making art out of your pain and out of your community's pain to elevate it to this new level, to get all these eyes on it and get people actually interested, that's the shit. That's the shit.
And honestly, I feel like it's totally off subject, but I feel like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is a good example of that.
Amen.
Of like bridging the gap. You know,
gotta bridge the gap.
That is a white comedy show.
Yes, it is.
Full of black people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that is, and it
do
was
you know
the
Maris
same...
wasn't allowed to watch that growing up?
Are you fucking
because his dad was so racist. And he would sneak off to watch it.
That's disgusting.
Because Maris was just fascinated.
I'm so thankful that my family, like my immediate family household, was beyond racist. I mean, my dad didn't like gangster rap because he doesn't like drugs, but you know what I mean? Words. Yeah, he does not like that. But it was like, I mean, I know now looking back, it's not good to say this, but it was Cosby Show, you know, yeah. It was Three's Company. It was, you know, all those shows growing up. What was the one with, what you talking about, Willis? Like the kid in the big fancy house?
Oh, shit. I'm going to forget.
God, we watched that a lot.
I watched that one too, and now I can't think about the fucking name of it.
Y'all are gonna be over there screaming your head off on the other
side.
Sorry,
we're dumb. It's been many years, many drugs and head injuries.
Right. But yeah, that's what brought us here. You know, that's what brought music in. That's what, you know, it bridged the gap between.
Well, the reason I bring it up, and not just bridging the gap, is that I really felt like I would get into arguments with people about rap because they would say it's stupid and like it's just violent and ignorant. I'm like, man, you're not listening. Yeah. You're not getting the subtext to this shit at all. Mm-hmm. Because that's not what they're saying.
And it takes a level of intelligence to even understand it, which is something that
I
really like.
It is so fucking layered.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so good.
Like, this is kind of like a comedic aside, but it just reminded me of the other day. I just randomly remembered, I think I put on one of Nelly's early albums just for like
Nelly.
Nelly was the biggest crush I've ever had in my entire life.
A crush on Nelly as well.
Which is kind of funny because I was age appropriate at 14. Anyway, yeah. So
I was like, it is getting hot in here.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, sir.
I loved him. I did a time capsule on New Year's with my friends when I was 14, and I kissed Nelly's picture because he played the ball drop on in
that's right he did
2004-2005. Anyway, so I was re-listening to that album. I was re-listening to Country Grammar, and it says Street Sweeper Baby Cocked Ready to Let It Go. And I remember as a child, I was like, I know what a street sweeper is. It's that
machine.
It's that thing, that guy that drives that thing early in the morning before the sun comes up.
Yeah.
I was like, these people, this guy is getting to work real early. He's getting to work so early.
It's 4 a.m.
It's 4 a.m. He's meeting the street sweeper and he's ready to let it go.
But see, and like, that's how deep it is.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. And then it hit me as a 33-year-old woman. He means that's a drive-by.
Yes.
That is a drive-by.
Indeed.
But, you know, it is.
But that's how layered it is. But then you can find all this subtext and, like, it speaks on poverty, drug addiction, racism.
Yes.
And like,
it speaks on your community.
Amen.
And where you want to go. And
that's why I fell
in love
with it.
And why you want to do it. Most of it is, honestly, I just want to fucking take care of my mama.
It is, sadly. Mm-hmm. Or like, these streets are mean to me and my friends.
And my friends are in prison for selling dope or dead.
Yeah.
And the only reason why we're selling dope is to get our mama a house.
Yeah.
My God.
So like, I don't know. Before, like, if any of you are listening and be like, ugh, gangster rap. No, go just read the lyrics. Read the lyrics.
Yeah.
Think about the subtext. And then you'll be like, okay.
Listen to Biggie.
I love Biggie.
Love Biggie.
But I love Tupac more. Sorry,
I always leaned more on Biggie, but I just
Tupac
really like
fan.
I like the New York vibe more than I like the West Coast vibe.
I'm the opposite.
That's
and
just
it's
personal,
okay.
And that's a beat thing. That's probably an
I like them both,
thing.
But I just always I got introduced to West Coast first, and so I think that's why I liked it more. Mm-hmm. But it just, you know, whatever.
So back to the case. We're in 2000 now. So in 2000, Big Lurch received a devastating phone call while he was in California, informing him that his beloved grandmother had passed away. So he decided to put everything on hold in California and go back to Texas, attend the funeral, be with his family for a little bit, and, you know, just kind of soak up family time before getting back to work. That September, while he was celebrating his 24th birthday there in Dallas, he was driving down the road when he was hit straight on by a drunk driver.
Oh my God.
This accident would nearly cost him his life. And some would say inevitably would cost him his life. He had multiple severe injuries, including a broken neck and severe damage that left him, or nerve damage that left him temporarily paralyzed, drifting in and out of a coma. He spent 2 months recovering in the hospital, drifting in and out of not just a coma, but also like morphine drip was on, you know what I mean? So it was a lot of that, and then learning how to eat again, learning how to walk again. But just 2 months into this hospital stay, his insurance quit paying. Excuse me. And yeah, he just couldn't, he couldn't afford his prescriptions. He couldn't afford to stay in the hospital. And he wasn't done healing. He is a 6 foot tall, 7 inch man. Like, that's a lot of human being to heal. You know, yeah. I don't know. I don't know, I don't if that's think that how makes biology a difference, happens, no. But that's all I could think about this time, like, or throughout this case, was like, that's a lot of human.
It is, but it heal at the same rate.
Gotcha. Well, still, I mean, fuck the American Medical Association.
Fuck the whole system.
Fuck the
man.
Whole system, dude. Like, they just kicked him out. And
they will do that,
like,
shit.
He had a little bit of a prescription for painkillers left, but once that was gone, he was like, he didn't have any money to refill his script. So he was essentially sent out to the street after being on an IV drip for 2 months. Mm-hmm. Sent out, you know, cold turkey on top of this excruciating pain.
Yeah.
That I know you understand.
Yes, I do.
This is pain I could not understand.
I had no insurance at the time of my accident, so no, I did not get refill any of my scripts. And the only reason I got to go to even like my 2 months of physical therapy was because my car insurance lent me money.
Wow.
Because it's so clearly not my fucking fault. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's out on the street. He's withdrawing. He's in pain. And a friend of his who was in a wheelchair told him that he uses SHRM in small doses.
Describe to people what that is so they know.
I will in a second.
Okay.
Yeah, I will in a second. But just for now, PCP.
Yeah.
But he used it in small amounts for pain management.
Yeah, he's microdosing it.
Yeah. Big Lurch had tried it a few times as a teenager, but he straight up did not have a good time. He was actually hospitalized for mental health issues stemming from one of the times that he had tried PCP, and he had sworn to never do it again. But he thought if it helped his friend, then it could help him. Now, PCP, also known as angel dust, wet stick, SHRM, it originally was created as an anesthetic, which I did not know this. It was banned fairly quickly, because of its obvious hallucinogenic side effects and a lot of other things. So PCP is typically sold as a white powder or dust. It can either be snorted, shot up, or laced in a joint or a cigarette. A lot of times, most of the time, it is dissolved in water, and you dip the end of a cigarette.
Yes, that's how I did it.
And that's why it's called wet or wet stick.
Mm-hmm. That's how I did it.
I didn't know you tried PCP.
I name a drug I've done it.
That's the only, that and besides that and heroin are the only two I haven't done. But I have done
I haven't done crocodile, and I'm not gonna.
I don't want to do that.
Nope, that one scares me.
What's the one that's like heroin that opium? Kills people?
Fentanyl. I've never done fentanyl.
I have smoked fentanyl.
How are you alive? I don't even
I didn't even know what it was. I just did it.
It'll fuck you up.
I'm literally shocked that I'm alive.
Yeah.
For real.
Me too.
That was the best feeling I've ever had in my entire life.
But that's why it kills people.
Yeah.
Heroin just made me go night-night. I'm not interested in going night-night.
Yeah.
Mm. I was like, Benadryl will do that too. So,
it's cheaper.
And it's cheaper and won't probably kill me. Yeah.
But yeah, so
PCP, though, I've never fucking touched that shit again.
Lots of side effects depending on how you take it. Euphoria, feeling of being invincible or strong. That's usually what they tell you in, like, DARE, that you can, like, lift a car.
No, you can't.
No.
That's not what it does at all.
Lots of hallucinations.
Yes.
But most of the time, violent delusions, paranoia, and psychosis.
Paranoia and anxiety is basically what I experienced. And I was like, this is not fun. Why does anyone do it?
Freaking the fuck out.
You just freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
For, like, an hour.
Yeah.
Hour and a half. Yeah.
Have you ever done, like, whippets or, like,
yeah,
air duster? I was a big air duster head. I feel, because I don't know what, I've never done PCP, but based on people's descriptions of it, it feels like it might have a little bit of that wah-wah effect or, like, weird.
Yeah. like...
Like, the air feels staticky and everything has tracers and shit.
Yes, I like, have said before, like, I could see the fucking air molecules. I couldn't, but it feels that way. It also feels like your whole... The whole universe is just stopping and starting and stopping and starting and stopping. It's awful, y'all. Don't ever do it.
Yeah. This episode will not make you, or it will make you never want to have anything to do with PCP ever, ever, ever.
I did it once and I was like, I'm good. Yeah. That was fucked. Yeah. I thought I'd die.
Well, and Big Lurch thought the same thing. He was like, I never want to do that again, but he's in so much pain.
I understand that.
He'll literally do anything. He knew this drug gave him delusions and hallucinations. Most of the time, his were very religious delusions, which I know a lot of people have religious delusions on drugs.
It's part of why they call it angel dust.
Oh.
Is because it's frequent, those kind of delusions.
Oh, gotcha. I thought it was just because it was white.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, like, let's just be honest. A lot of religion already has to do with forced hallucinations.
Okay, yeah.
Not to be that guy. Let's just be that guy for a second.
We'll be that guy.
Because people think that they're actually talking to God a lot of the time, or convince themselves that they are, or they start to hear voices or whatever, and that's sober. That's at church, right? So once you give them drugs...
Consciousness is wild, man. Yeah, so like, yeah. I don't know.
So I understand why a lot of people do feel like...
Well, usually these delusions will only be present in people with any kind of religious upbringing.
Yes, especially, yeah.
And he grew up in Texas, right?
Texas.
So that's a lot of Catholics because of the Hispanic population. Mm-hmm. So he has seen the iconography everywhere. I would surmise that it's probably because his hallucinations were religious because he was surrounded by iconography.
Right, right. Well, and I'm assuming his family was probably religious too.
Probably.
And went to church and things like that.
Probably Baptist or Methodist.
Big Southern families always are church-centric.
Baptist or Methodist, you know.
I was Baptist.
Methodist here. Well, I was raised with nothing, but... My parents were raised Methodist.
God, I went to church almost every single day of the week.
Fuck that shit.
Worked at the church. So a lot of his delusions were mostly like God and the devil type shit.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, he was just in so much pain. He had to do something. So he promised himself that he would only take small doses to manage the pain and nothing else. At this time, he only smoked weed. He didn't even drink. He didn't party like that. He didn't like to do drugs.
Doesn't seem like his character, honestly.
No, and he really liked to stay, like, clean-headed, like, stable-headed.
Me fucking too.
And he's not a violent person. Like, he may rap about, like, and write about a lot of violent things.
Well, if we could take a pause to talk about that for just 1 second, because I see it all the fucking time.
1,000%.
So I really love 3-6 Mafia.
Yes.
And it's satanic rap, okay? Mm-hmm. So they talk a lot about, like, killing babies and like doing ritual sacrifice and worshiping the devil.
I never looked into 3-6 Mafia's lyrics.
Yeah, I saw that. It's all that shit. Yeah, murdering.
That's so wild. I'll just like vibe along with it and like I'll even like rap along with it and not even pay attention.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of people assume that if you make that sort of content, then you must be fucked up yourself. Y'all,
I'm fucked up, but not like that.
Not like that. Listen, I write horror. I write grimdark fantasy, which is fantasy horror, basically. And I write erotica that borders on horror sometimes. I've written some of the most fucked up, depraved, nasty, nasty. Like, if you can think of it and go, Lillian, have you done this nasty? I'd be like, I have done that nasty. But in real life, I'm pretty vanilla.
You are.
Vanilla, not gonna lie.
Yeah. You like cupcakes and...
I fucking love cupcakes.
Tiramisu.
Yes, I do.
Could a murderer make tiramisu? I don't know.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm wholesome is what I'm trying to say. My real life, I am like petting dogs and like loving my family. And I'm not a freaky deek like that. Fuck no.
Yeah.
But I like to say something with shocking imagery. And it's just a form of art. And I get really tired of people saying like, well, they would say because he made this kind of rap, he's that kind of violent person. And clearly he does some violence or we wouldn't be talking about him.
Maybe.
But maybe not. So we'll see.
Girl, that's what this episode is all about.
Oh, shit. Let's get into it more. I'm interested.
So right now he's in Texas, right? He's hurt. Back in California, all the producers and artists that he had worked with, they heard about his car accident. And they wanted to help. They were like, whoa, what the fuck, Big Lurch? Like, we got to help you, dude. Like, we got to get you help. So a lot of people reached out to him, trying to help him, you know, get back on his feet, help him get medicine, help him get, you know, whatever type of help he could get. One of the people that reached out to him was Milton Grimes of Stress Free Records. Now, Milton Grimes might ring a bell to you.
Yeah, it do.
Do you know who he is?
I'm going to let you say it. Go on.
Oh, no. I think you should say it.
No. You do. You do.
He was historically the attorney for Rodney King.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just can't even talk about that case. I already started, like, choked up.
No, I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
That one really upsets me.
But he did help Rodney King. That's fine.
Yeah.
Fuck this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to, like, lose it, so I'm being quiet. So I said, you do it.
So he said that he would help with his recovery.
Yeah.
If he signed on to their label.
What a piece of shit.
Lurch made quite the name for himself in the West Coast. Like, everybody fucking loved his sound. Like, Tupac loved his sound. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, you hear him on those tracks, he sounds like something that every track should have, at least somewhere in it, in the hook, in the background. Like, his voice was the bass sound that every track needed.
Yeah.
He was essential, especially to that sound. Everybody wanted him back in the West Coast. So Milton Grimes banked on this, and he was like, okay, I will, you know, pay the way for you. I'll pay your plane ticket. I will help you with your recovery. You know, I just move
well,
here.
That's making a deal with a fucking devil right there is what that is.
So he flew Lurch out to California, and when he got there, he realized the whole record label was made up of members of Crips. He was blood.
Yep.
So this is a big, big friction.
Big here. Faux pas no in that world.
Lurch wasn't really focused on his gang life. Like, yeah, he was in the blood, but, like, he wasn't, like, in it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's kind of his background.
It's his background. Yeah. It's his community. Mm-hmm. It's his safety, you know? Because, yeah, he is this tall-ass motherfucker. He's big as hell, but I don't know him personally. But to me, he seems like a big softy. Just saying, he seems like a big softy at heart. So he, you know, you need your gang around you for protection, especially around
in this
here.
World. Yes, for sure.
Now, the other Crips in the studio taunted him, made fun of him so much that it was only a matter of time that a fight was going to break out.
Obviously.
So that was just way too much stress for Lurch. He couldn't write music under that. Mm-mm. So he decided to back out before he signed a record deal. He was like,
very
you know what?
Fucking
I can't
smart.
Do this. Like, I got to get out of here. So he moved. He flew back to Texas. He went back to Dallas and tried to work on music. It wasn't working for him. So he started selling drugs on the side to make ends meet. And he ended up catching a drug charge pretty quickly. And guess who called to help get him out of jail?
Same motherfucker.
Milton motherfucking Grimes, attorney at law. So he offered to not only help him out of this little pickle that he was in, but also still help him with his recovery as long as he signed on to their record label and got to work on his solo album. So
because what else choice does he have?
He's backed into a corner. He has nowhere else to go.
That's what that piece of shit wanted.
Exactly. It's what they prey on.
Exactly. Like, people don't get
the
producer
prey.
Drama. Okay. They are predatory as fuck.
Ooh, and I'm going to get into that later at the very end of the episode.
Right.
Because there is a little bit of controversy, mm-hmm. a little bit of, you know,
there
conspiracy.
Always is in these fucking cases. Mm-hmm. There's
especially cases that have to deal with both the music industry or, like, the celebrity industry or gang life.
Mm-hmm.
It's very layered. It's very interconnected.
Yeah, no doubt.
Extremely interconnected on, like, a silent level. Like, we don't even speak on this. It's eerie, and I love it. 'Cause I love to dig into it. But yeah, so Milton got him out of jail. He got him on a flight to California, and he got straight into the studio and started working on his album. But soon he came into the same problems, you know, like Bloods versus Crips in the studio. Like, what's he going to do? So Lurch knew that he needed the protection of his crew. And especially because, like, not only is he kind of a non-confrontational softy, but, like, he's still in excruciating pain. He is not healed. He has not recovered. Like, nobody really went into the extent of his injuries other than his broken neck. But, like, we're talking broken ribs. We're talking, you know, long-term, probably still to this day, nerve issues. You know, there's a lot of things that are going on with his healing right mm-hmm. now. So, if a fight did break out, what would happen to him?
Well, he'd lose.
Yeah, and he has a long ways to fall because mm-hmm. he's tall. You know, so
I'm gonna make short jokes in a minute.
Girl, I'm so glad that, like, if I fall, I don't get hurt that bad. I got a big booty to bounce on.
You learn how to fall when you're tall.
I am 3 feet off of the ground, like, from my feet to my butt. Like, if I need to fall, I'm not that far away. Mm-hmm. I don't even think my legs are more than 2.5 feet. I need to measure them. But anyway, excuse me. I'm sorry. So anyway, he linked up with some other Blood members in the area and ended up moving into a dope house, literally called the dope house. Like, that's what people called it. So I'm not, like, condescending or whatever, but, yeah, lots of weight being moved throughout this house, lots of people in and out, lots of guns. Like, yeah. We're talking like a full arsenal. They had everything in there. And they basically had a full pharmacy, too. So the house was mainly run by a man named Thomas Moore and Thomas's girlfriend, 21-year-old Tynesha Isais. Now, they together had 2 small children also living there. But thankfully, during, like, the heavy parties, the, you know, large amounts of people in the house, apparently the children had, like, another family member that they would go stay with. So later on, when I talk about this party that goes down, the children were not there. Which, yeah, brings us to the night of the crime. April 10th, 2002, the night of the Hoodie Awards, which I really wanted to put myself in the place of this evening. So I actually went back and watched some of the segments from the 2002 Hoodie Awards, and Steve Harvey was so young.
Yeah,
so young. His hair was so, like, dark and
luxurious.
Thick. Yeah, luxurious. Cedric the Entertainer was there, and very young. It was really cute because, like, Cedric the Entertainer, like, called out to his mama in the crowd, who was just gorgeous. But they called her Mama the Entertainer, and I just thought that was so cute.
It's cute.
So Big Lurch was at the Hoodie Awards that night. He was there with all of the producers, you know, all the musicians. He was there with a lot of people that got awards that night. It was a hell of a night. It was a hell of a good time. And honestly, like, I saw some of the performances from that night. Like, shit was wild. Shit was amazing. Like, that was a great fucking night. All those performances killed it. There was even, like, some younger kids that killed it. It was a great night. It was a great night. And, they were having a good time. After a night out celebrating at the Hoodie Awards, they went home back to their place for the after party, and they all passed around Sherm, wet sticks.
Yeah.
And Big Lurch was intimidated by the potency of these sticks. He later said that he didn't want to look like a punk in front of his friends or anything, but he felt like something was off with this very much stronger dosage.
Well, people, if you add more powder to fucking water, you can make it really fucking strong.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, you got to watch the people making it.
Yes.
Because they can fuck you
yes.
up.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I could assume you would want to do that as, you know, bigger parties and stuff if you're sharing with more people.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure there would be that idea, like, if I add more, it'll last longer.
More potent. Yeah, yeah.
But no, the first few people get really fucking slammed. You know what I
mean?
And
then, like, fuck things up and go to jail.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So what follows next varies as far as who you're talking to. There are several accounts of what happens this night. So we'll try to get to the bottom of it. So some sources say that the party naturally dispersed as people, you know, headed home or whatever.
Passed out, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera.
You know, dwindling down person by person, eventually the night led to one of Lurch's friends, Lurch, Thomas Moore, and his girlfriend. So the people that lived there plus one friend. It is said that Thomas left to go make a delivery run or run an errand. And in this account, it is said that Thomas looked at Lurch's friend and was like, keep an eye on my girl. And then when he shut the door, this is all from the friend's account. He said when he shut the door, Tynesha went to the bathroom, excused herself, went to the bathroom. And when she closed the door, allegedly Lurch looked at his friend and said, I'm gonna go get some pussy. And then went into the bathroom after her. This friend said that he left the house thinking that they were consensually hooking up, even though he had allegedly heard screaming as he went down the stairs, but he did nothing. He just left. Now, this man says that he ended up, you know, going down the street and later on running into one of Tynesha's friends. I believe her name was Alyssa. That was just like right up the road. He ran into her and he was like casually talking about the hoodie awards, talking about all the fun that they had done, all the things they had done that night. And, you know, he's fucked up on Sherm. He'd been drinking and all this stuff. And in that interaction, he had mentioned that he had just left Tynesha's house and that, you know, her and Lurch might be doing something. So this is Tynesha's friend.
Yeah.
Tynesha knows the situation between her and Thomas. Mm-hmm. She knows the situation between her and Lurch. She knows they're just roommates. They're barely friends. You know, they're just borderline acquaintances. So she's like, I'm going to go check on her. So most sources say that what had really happened was Thomas had left the party to go do this run, that when Thomas left, Lurch got all fucked up on PCP, started yelling at everybody to get out of the house, all except for Tynesha. Now, one of the main things that I have that I think is wrong with that is, first of all, Lurch is still in pain. He's still mm-hmm. broken, right? And these are all gang members that he looks up to. How in the fuck is he going to bow up to people that he is subservient to?
Well, I mean, if he is under the influence.
We don't know either way.
So we don't know.
But to me, that one, that's the only part of that story that I'm just like, I don't know. So either way, this friend of Tynesha's was walking down the street on her way to the dope house when she came across a man in the street. He was completely naked. His features were unrecognizable due to the amount of blood that was smeared all over his face and all over his body. He was hunched over in a very animalistic stance. He was pulling at his hair, growling and staring at the sky. This woman kept her distance. She called the police.
Yeah, suck.
But little did she realize the police were already on their way.
Oh, damn.
They had told her not to approach this man, clearly, and to get as far away as possible. So she hung up the phone. She rushed to Tynesha's house. And she knew something was wrong instantly. As she's ascending the steps up to the front door, she sees drops of blood get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Oh, God.
And you could even see, like, footprints, like bare feet. Footprints of blood going down the sidewalk and everything.
That's so fucking scary.
She saw blood smears on the walls and the railings. She opened the door to her friend's apartment or her friend's house to find Tynesha, a 21-year-old mother of two, dead on the floor in a pool of her own blood, disemboweled, her face completely beaten in and bitten. She turned around. She didn't, you know, fully go in.
Mm-mm.
She saw her friend lying there. She turned around. And as she's going to get help, swarms of police cars just show up right then. Like,
yeah.
I'm talking several units, several different police departments all arrive all at once. And, you know, they block off the crime scene. They take Tynesha's friend in to get her story, to comfort her, to get her through this very traumatic thing that she had just gone through. Like, this fucked her up Well, reasonably, yeah. Reasonably so. But they wanted to get her story and the accounts of what she had seen. The naked man covered in blood, growling in the street, was Big Lurch.
Yeah.
And Big Lurch doesn't remember a single thing. All he knows is that he got hella fucked up at this party, thought the world was ending. He thought he needed to kill the devil to save the world. And then all of a sudden, he woke up 2 weeks later.
Fuck.
2 weeks.
Sounds like he just had a complete psychotic break.
He woke up in jail. Now, he had no idea what he had done to get there. He found out that he had been placed on haloperidol.
Haloperidol. Yeah, I've been on that. It's fucky shit. It will completely kill your memory, by the way.
That's what he was on for 2 weeks.
Yep, that'll completely fucking wash it. It will just whitewash your entire memory. It is like falling in a hole.
So I had no idea what this drug was. Yeah. It is an antipsychotic typically used to treat people high on PCP.
Yep.
Or people with mental and mood disorders like schizophrenia.
Yes.
So people having mental health episodes, like big episodes.
Yeah, when I got involuntarily committed for a 72-hour hold, I was put on that.
It kind of just turns your brain off.
Sure does. Bye.
Yeah. I don't really remember much of it. It just kind of puts you into like this, like it's one person said that it turns you into a zombie, basically.
You don't remember shit.
Yeah. Apparently you become completely numb and unable to speak, and you get placed in almost like a disassociative comatose state.
Yes. It's very much like going in a K-hole, but like sleepier and less aware. And I will say, like, if they put him on that, I get why they would have if he was like acting really crazy because of the PCP.
But PCP wears off.
Well, the thing is, it's like you might have to do that to subdue a person, but to keep putting him on it.
Okay, so he woke up after 2 weeks. They continued to put him on this afterwards.
Oh my God.
Like they kept putting him on this.
That's fucked.
It's a red fucking flag, is it not?
It's a bit of a red flag.
So, he was, you know, pretty much unconscious for 2 weeks. He had somehow already acquired a lawyer, though.
Guess who? Milton. Piece of shit.
Milton fucking Grimes was already appointed as his lawyer and was already making decisions on his behalf.
Because a lawyer can do that. That's why you hire a lawyer. But he didn't hire him.
He was on that medication and was somehow able to be coerced.
Yeah, pretty much.
He got him, so he talked to Milton, and Milton got him up to date with what had happened, leaving out as many details as humanly possible. He basically just told him that he had killed his roommate and now he's facing murder charges. Milton told him that he needed to look as crazy as humanly possible so he could get an insanity plea so he could go to a facility instead of prison. But Milton should have known that California has very strict laws on insanity plea. You cannot get an insanity plea if you were, you know,
ever sane in your entire life.
If you were deemed sane prior to making the decision to take the drugs.
Yep.
You don't get an insanity plea because of the drug use.
Which I think is fucked because certain drugs could definitely send you into a psychotic episode.
Right.
To where you have diminished capacity.
You may have underlying issues that you don't know about.
It sounds like he has underlying mental
I think
issues.
He was later on diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
There we go. That'll really fuck with you.
It can.
The PCP plus like bipolar. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah. And he doesn't sound like he was in like a high or good place when he took this drug. Like he was already struggling. You know what I mean?
Right. And we don't know what happened at that party or what conversations were held while smoking Sherm.
Yeah.
So we have no idea how he got into that state. He also told Big Lurch not to speak in court and that he'll do all the talking. Milton was also supposed to provide his client with suitable clothing for court because, remember, he was found naked.
Yeah.
He didn't do that. Big Lurch had to basically scrounge for clothes. And so he showed up to court looking a fucking mess.
Yeah.
And not just that, he's still on that drug.
Yeah. So he's out of it.
Yeah. Completely out of it. So it did not look good for the jury.
They treated him like a wild animal.
Yes.
That's fucked.
Because they wanted him to seem like a wild animal. So he was growling at police, so might as well keep going with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. He was on that haloperidol.
Haloperidol.
And so he didn't even realize in court that there were witnesses coerced to lie about his involvement and about his character. He didn't realize. He wasn't even able to, like, really fully understand what was going on in court. So he couldn't defend himself in any way. Even if he was allowed to speak, he wasn't able to.
Damn.
So, long story short, it didn't fucking work. No. Lurch got a fucking life sentence for a crime he doesn't even remember committing. And they had hardly any evidence for this.
Well, I mean, he was covered in her blood.
I'm going to get into this.
Oh, okay.
Because fuck this shit. Fuck this case. Fuck all of it. Like, I'm Team Big Lurch, dude. Like, I fucking love this guy. So, I mean, I won't go that far because I don't know all of the sins that he's had. You know what I mean? Like, anytime I say I love a celebrity, I find out something.
I don't ever love a celebrity for that fucking reason. But you know what I
mean? Like, with this case, I'm still on his side. So, the victim's mother, Carolyn Stenson, is also on Big Lurch's side.
Oh, damn.
She believes Big Lurch is innocent. Completely. But, so she said that her daughter, Tynesha, was packing her bags, had her bags packed and ready to go.
To leave that guy.
The night of that party.
Okay.
She said that Thomas Moore had been extremely violent and abusive towards her throughout their relationship. She said that he'd been hitting and abusing her for years leading up to that night and when she planned on leaving him. So she doesn't think that Big Lurch did anything to her, because even though he writes about this violence, he's not a violent person in real life, and he had no reason to hurt Tynesha. Like, aside from PCP delusions, like, people really just want to blame the PCP on this. And you know, saying that he probably thought that she was the devil, and so he had to kill her because he was supposed to be killing the devil, you know, all this stuff. But the evidence doesn't support this. So here's the evidence. So, trigger warning ahead of time, I'm going to talk about...
That's going to be nasty.
I'm going to talk about some of the things that she went through. So, Tynesha survived the majority of her injuries.
Oh, God.
There were extreme... And these injuries were extreme, to say the least. She had extensive defensive wounds all over her body. She had been cut more times than she had been stabbed. So this person wanted to torture her. This person wanted her to feel pain. This isn't somebody that just wanted her dead. She had multiple stab wounds. A piece of the knife was actually lodged in her shoulder plate. She had a broken neck, fractured eye socket, teeth marks on her face, and teeth marks on her body. Like, somebody had, like, chewed on her. She had one long gash. She was cut open from her throat all the way down her stomach. Her organs were pulled out.
Christ.
One lung was just completely out of her body. She was disemboweled, and her intestines, parts of her intestines had been chewed off.
Jesus.
Now, the evidence linking Lurch to the murder boiled down to... obviously, her blood on him. And the fact that when his stomach was pumped, they did find a piece of her in his stomach that did match to the piece missing.
All right. Well, I have a hard time with that evidence.
But Tynesha was officially killed by blunt force trauma to the head. The murder weapon was her child's push scooter, like a razor scooter. The scooter had bloody handprints and fingerprints all over it. The knife used to stab her also had bloody fingerprints all over it. But they didn't belong to Lurch.
Oh, that's fucking
interesting. Or the victim. They never tested to see if it matched anyone else.
Okay, fuck the police. But that's
they never took prints from around the apartment. They which there were many. Like, there was blood smears. There was, I mean, shit was everywhere.
Yeah.
There was DNA everywhere. There was palm prints, handprints, shit, like, evidence fucking everywhere. But none of it was, no evidence was taken on this case. No fucking evidence was submitted on this case.
It's because he was covered in her blood and had a piece of her in his stomach.
They thought it was just good to go.
Yeah.
Even Lurch's clothes were never accounted for.
Okay, that's weird.
Right? The teeth marks on the victim's face and body did not match Lurch either.
It's like somebody had him come in after the fact and tricked him into
eating one piece.
Eating a piece of her and getting his, putting her blood all over him. Or there was somebody else and he was helping. That's the way I see it.
Now, they never tested the bite marks against anybody else's teeth. They never tried to look at anybody else in this case at all. And one thing that they left out of court, which I think might have swayed the jury in some way, is the fact that the couple's pit bull was in the house during this time. So a lot of people think that some of the bite marks might have been from the pit bull.
Might have been.
You never know. Although I did see pictures of the bite marks. They are human.
So probably not.
So probably not. But still, it wasn't released in court. Tynesha's toxicology report stated that she had ridiculously extreme high levels of PCP in her system. And she was not a user. She did not use PCP. She refused to use it.
She got spiked. She got drugged.
The amount of PCP in her system would have been impossible for her to physically do. That's how much was in her body.
Well, then how'd it get in there if it was impossible?
The medical examiner concluded that someone had to have poured it down her throat.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Like they mixed it with water and just poured it down her throat. Mm-hmm. Also, when police entered the house, the guns were gone. And when I say a full arsenal, I mean a full arsenal. I'm talking countless assault rifles.
Well, they cleaned that fully shit out automatics, of there before the police got
there. All of the, but if it's just Lurch running around naked and the victim on the floor, nobody else there. Who did
They're
it?
Even saying nobody else was there.
Nobody else was there.
Oh, no, I don't believe that.
That's
shit.
What I'm saying, dude.
Yeah, I don't believe
That's
that.
That's what
shit.
I'm saying. All the guns, all the drugs, all the ammo. You're telling me all of it was gone? And the only amount of time that we have in this timeline is from the time for that friend to walk away, if he was even there. And that one friend to walk down the street to come back.
So what,
back.
Like 20 minutes?
Exactly.
How they move all that stuff in 20
exactly.
minutes?
Exactly.
It's just him and that's he's all my, fucked up.
That's my point.
Seemed like the attack would take about 20 minutes.
This timeline, more than 20 minutes. I mean, this is a vicious fucking attack. There's blood all over the house.
I don't get it. This don't make no fucking sense.
None of it does, dude. None of it does.
Unless he was fighting the devil and that's who did it. I mean,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
Still, yeah.
Still.
Do you see why, like, this case was like...
It's a big
I was like, yeah, yeah, a cannibal rapper. Let's talk about it. But then I looked into it and I was like, no, let's fucking talk about this. I need to talk about this. I need, like, a support group because I'm fucked up about this case, dude.
I don't know what I think. I think he definitely didn't act alone.
Right.
If he did it.
There's no way he did. He could barely stand.
Yeah, I'm saying he didn't.
He was drugged too, dude.
I think he was drugged and she was drugged. And this was a setup to kill her because she was trying to leave.
Among many other things, my friend.
I'm sure there are more.
There are many layers
to
this.
Some drugs and some guns.
And some records.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah. In court, one of the biggest pieces of evidence used against Big Lurch was his new unreleased album that he had been working on in the studio.
And did it have something like the attack in it?
The album was called It's All Bad. And the album cover showed Big Lurch holding a tray with a human skull on it. The title track called I Did It To You was specifically used in court. They read his lyrics out loud.
Oh, shit.
So the hook goes, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, and Freddy Krueger, Jeffrey Dahmer, Charles Manson, and all your friends. I'm finna school ya. Cause murder's a hobby and I'm using a torture chamber and not a Ruger. So if you wake up in a pile, in a puddle of blood, bitch, I did it to ya.
Yep. That doesn't look good.
Like,
but it's a song. Like,
looking
chill.
Back, especially from our point of view, it's the stupidest piece of evidence, and it has it's absolutely not nothing to do with this case. It doesn't even talk about. He's talking about a torture chamber.
Like, that's not a torture chamber.
No,
he just somebody just went fucking nuts. I think maybe they did it to set him up. I don't know.
So here's the conspiracy.
All right.
In 2004, after the court case was final. And, you know, Lurch was sent off to prison. Stress-Free Records and Black Market Records both released Lurch's LP, It's All Bad. And these horrorcore producers seem to be capitalizing on headlines like Cannibal Rapper gets a life sentence and the media frenzy that surrounds these gruesome crimes in order to sell records.
I'm sure they sold some.
Essentially saying, you know, to the public, like, see, we have the hardest horrorcore rappers in the scene. They're literally doing what they write about. Fucking eating people, torturing them, and chopping them up. Like, they are living their word. Like, they are authentic.
They're legit.
They're legit. Yeah. Buy our records. So, Cedric Singleton of Black Market Records, who also signed Brother Lynch, had done the exact same thing with another rapper called X-Rated.
I know this case.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You should cover it.
Maybe I will.
So he was sentenced to 30 years for a crime he swore he was innocent of, and he would swear his innocence until the day he died in prison. Mm-hmm. He never saw justice. And, of course, his music was used against him in his court case, and the album was released shortly after the conviction. There is honestly a list of...
There's a list of this shit, and you know what? Maybe that's true. Maybe that is the conspiracy.
Dude, and there's a documentary that I highly suggest everybody watch. I saw clips of it because I couldn't afford to purchase it because...
It's a bad time right now.
I only have $2. But
yeah, dude, I got you beat. I have $13.83.
Mm-hmm. No, I said two.
I got you beat.
Oh, beat. I thought you meant worse. No. The sad thing is I told a friend of mine that I had $1.22 in my bank account. So she sent me $1 so I could have an angel number.
We laugh, otherwise we cry.
It's do. So this documentary is called Rhyme and Punishment. And that's the sole purpose of that documentary, is to show how producers will utilize these, you know, writers and music artists to capitalize on their sentences.
That's fucked.
I get it, literally. Most of them, if not all of them, are all innocent. They want to capitalize on you know, gang life, murder, you know.
And they don't need them to keep selling records. They just need them to sell one record a whole bunch.
Exactly. Which sucks because all of these people are, like, really fucking talented. Do you realize what Lurch would have done to the music scene?
It'd have been great.
Oh, my God, dude. He would blow it out of the fucking water. He would be standing right next to Snoop Dogg with Martha right fucking now.
Yeah.
You know Big Lurch would have released sex tapes too. Like, he should have gone into the porn industry. He really should have. I don't even know what the man looks like without a shirt on, but I'm just saying, he could have made bank just by his appearance alone. So since then, Big Lurch has been speaking out about his case, rightly so. It took him a while to get off the drugs that they had him on. Sure. And as soon as he got some clarity, he was like, what the fuck? Like, the fuck did I just go through? What the fuck happened to me? And after he went to prison, he tried like hell to call Milton Grimes back. And Milton Grimes refused to answer his phone call.
What a shocker, like, there.
He rang up so many phone bills in prison just trying to contact his lawyer. Nothing. Completely
ghost.
He needs
a new fucking lawyer.
So he's been on numerous talk shows and podcasts talking about the incident and how his lawyer completely fucked him over. Carolyn Stinson, Tynesha's mother, has since filed a wrongful death suit, both against Big Lurch, which I think, I don't know if it was retracted since then, but like 4 months after his court case, she put in this lawsuit. That was also against his bodyguard, also Stress Free Records, Death Row Records, Thomas Moore, and Thomas Moore, which is Tynesha's boyfriend. So the lawsuit against the record companies, the lawsuit stated that the record companies were feeding artists drugs so that way it could kind of give them a certain look or, you know, a certain act in order to sell records. Death Row was eventually taken off the lawsuit because Suge Knight was like, I don't even know Big Lurch. So, couldn't be me.
Fuck Suge Knight.
I don't even don't like saying started. His name, dude. I don't even like, ugh.
Don't even get me started on that motherfucker.
So, Tynesha's mother believes that Lurch was set up. She believes that they got him super high and then found Tynesha. She believes that he found Tynesha after the party. That he was so fucked up and that he had found her in that condition.
That it freaked him out.
That it freaked him out. And she thinks that he saw like a piece of meat laying on the ground and just picked it up because he thought it was food. I
don't think so on that. I don't know.
I love that she thinks that. And I really commend her for that because she sees the humanity in him. I kind of think a little bit differently. It is my personal belief that he was forced to eat it.
Maybe.
I think he was forced to take part in this just for the sheer fact that he could get covered in blood and have a piece of her in his stomach. That's it. I think that I just think that Thomas did this.
I do too.
I fully believe that Thomas Moore did this.
If here's my thought. If Big Lurch had anything to do with it, then Thomas was helping.
I think Thomas was instigating
it. Well, that's what I mean. Thomas was the lead guy.
I don't know for sure, but I know that all these people are interconnected. And I want to say that Thomas had a lot of links with the record companies. So
maybe
there could be some tie-ins there. Well, because a lot of sources kind of got Thomas Moore and Milton Grimes confused, saying that his record producer was also his roommate. So I had to really like dig and do some clarifications there. So who knows? Who knows, really?
Yeah.
We don't know what happened that night. There's no way to tell.
We never will.
Because the evidence is gone.
Yeah, because they didn't collect it.
Right. So,
the whole case should be fucking thrown out.
I just really want this to. I can't remember if the Innocence Project picked this one up or not. I want to say they have.
I will Google real quick for you.
Do that, because I meant to do that. Because it should. There was a huge Free Big Lurch movement, which the campaign has since been taken down, but they had merch, dude. Like they had like t-shirts and shit that said Free Lurch or Free Big Lurch. But I do, in the comments section, and if you remember to put this in the description somewhere on this post, I will have linked his information so you can actually write to him. He will write back. There was a person on Reddit that shared their story about writing to Big Lurch.
They have not taken up his case.
Oh, well, they should. My God. That's something that I would fight for sure. 1,000%. But yeah, this Redditor was like, Big Lurch is my favorite rapper of all time. And so I wrote to him and he wrote back and they told stories to each other and it was really cute. So I have his information, his address that you can write to him. I want to write to him if I ever get around to it.
Fuck it, I may. I'm just...
I would love to.
Yeah, we can do it.
Because like, and listen to the interviews, listen to his story. Like you can tell he's fucked up about this.
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, even if he
did it, he did it in a diminished capacity. And I don't, you guys know how I feel about that.
Right.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't like be punished for your crimes, even if you were in a diminished capacity.
Right.
But I don't believe prison is the best place for people who suffer a psychotic breakdown because of a drug. Or because they had a psychotic breakdown.
Right. He had no intentions of ever harming anyone before or after. Therefore, I don't think that he should be locked up.
It's such an insane crime. It's so insane and so violent and so deplorable.
And random.
It's pretty random.
It's fucking random.
It's his roommate. Why would he do that?
It wasn't planned. He had no motive. It wasn't planned.
Like, I guess she could say he's like, I'm going to go get some pussy. And then she turned him down and he flipped out. But I just, man, I don't know. It just doesn't really track. He had no violent offenses. I checked.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense
to me. He doesn't. Yeah. There was no violence in his background whatsoever. He never got in, as far as I could see. He never got into a fight. He never had any type of...
He didn't have no weapons charges, no burglary, no domestic. Nothing.
Not even, like, childhood
fights. We look at, like, cannibal killers, okay? And we have looked at lots of them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of lead-up to that shit.
There's a lot that goes into eating a person, for sure. And it is usually years of build-up.
It's like a decision they make.
Yeah.
They just... Absolutely. And a lifelong fixation. And you can't tell me, because I've written about weirder shit. I promise that those lyrics aren't even that bad. Like, I've written worse shit.
Yeah.
And I won't even kill bugs, y'all.
Yeah. This has a lot to do with, like, horror culture and movies.
Yeah.
A lot of it stems from movies.
I knew it.
You know?
Like, a lot of people don't realize this, especially if you're not involved in the Black community in any way. Man, they fucking love horror movies, y'all.
Yeah.
It's an event. I want you to sometime go to an area of town that is predominantly African American and sit in a theater and watch a horror movie, because you're gonna have a time, okay?
It is
so fun.
My God, I love, like,
they hollering at
the big loud people in the back that are just like, oh shit, like,
yeah
like they're saying what you
girl
think.
Run yeah like love that
shit, man.
I went to the Blair Witch Blair Witch movie. Yeah.
Okay.
And I went in, and I lived in the hood. I just did.
Yeah.
And so I went to a movie theater in the hood. That was the most fun I ever had at a fucking movie in my life. It was so funny.
I bet.
They're like, why are you standing there? Girl, run.
Yeah.
And then somebody hollered, like, that's why we don't go in the woods.
That's right. I don't remember what horror movie I went to go see as a teenager, but I had a very similar situation. And it was like very divided. Like, there was like the snarky white woman who's like sneering and gesturing,
be
like,
quiet.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, the big black lady behind me that didn't give a fuck, and she was saying
everything I was thinking. And they'll just be louder to get them Karens to leave the theater. Because, like, if you really immerse yourself, they're making this like an audience experience.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes, and it makes the movie.
It builds the tension.
It does.
It causes, like, comedic relief.
It does.
It's great.
Yes, it's a full experience.
But there was a big, like, Black culture of watching scary movies. Like, scary horror movies are really big in Black communities. And so, like, the horrorcore and Ripgut shit doesn't surprise me at all. Of course, these kids grew up with this shit, you know? Because their mamas took them to these theaters, and we all laughing as a community and a family. And, like, it's not as dark as you think it is. It's just not.
Yeah.
But that's my soapbox.
See, I needed that because, it just...
But as somebody who writes horror content and couples it with pornography, I get really offended by, like, well, you make this content, so surely you're a depraved freak. No, I'm fucking not.
Right.
In fact, but I have a weird OCD fascination with it where I'm so scared of accidentally hurting somebody.
I would never want to do anything intentionally wrong ever.
No.
Ever.
Like, I was so freaked out when I was a young mom that I'd accidentally hurt one of my children that sometimes I didn't want to touch them because, like, my OCD is a bitch. You know, intrusive thoughts and shit.
Right.
And so it just really pisses me off.
Well, and the other side to that angers me, really grinds my gears, is the equal opposite of that. The you know, you see these people that are deemed, like, holy people, right? That would never do anything wrong, Mother Teresa.
And Teresa's a big piece of shit, and I hope
she's
burning in hell.
Exactly. So if we're going to base everybody off of what we write about, speak about, and look like, then why the fuck is the Pope not the most holy person in the world? He's quite the opposite. So we can't do that. We cannot, you know, just say that a person is the art that they create.
No. Mm-mm. It's not true.
No.
It just has a good imagination,
or
just maybe was trying to, like, for me, writing, like, this weird shit is a way to deal with intrusive thoughts, is to make a story about it, and it helps it get out of my head.
And
so I wouldn't hurt a flea. I'm the biggest softie on earth.
Right.
I sound like a real bitch, but I'm super not.
See, and when I listen to Lurch's interviews and shit, that's what it feels like. He feels like a big softie.
Man, I'm going to have to look into this more. I want to watch that documentary.
Definitely watch that documentary.
I will. I'm into it now. Yeah. I'm like, because I fucking love horrorcore, and except ICP. Ew.
Okay.
Fucking ew.
ICP sucks. We all know that.
But we know that.
The Miracles.
Magical music video? Miracles. Yeah.
Fucking rainbows. How do they work?
Magnets. How do they work?
That's what it is. That's what it is.
Here's magnets. What I love, though, is there's a parody of it. I'm going to link it to you guys of the Magical Miracle fucking ICP song that they did on SNL. It's like, are children small or just far away? Blankets. How do they work? Like, it's... So funny.
Kills me. Oh, it just absolutely kills me.
And I will tell you this. I don't like ICP, but I like their fans, okay?
I don't.
I do, and I'll tell you why.
I've met some, but...
Let me tell you why, though. These are people, like, from the literal garbage can of the world, and they will love anybody and accept anybody, including LGBT, including black and brown people. If you're a part of the dark circus, okay, you're a part of it.
Yeah. I didn't know that they were inclusive to that degree.
They are inclusive to the point where they go to protests and
the
shit.
The Arkansas version of Hatchet Man that I've seen.
Oh, no.
Is very white supremacist.
Well, they would not be welcome at the dark carnival.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know.
I dated a guy who was a fucking hatchet head, okay?
Yeah.
And he was really annoying about it. But he was one of the most open-minded, loving people. He was like a hippie. He was like a hippie. Wow. A genuine hippie who, like, loved everybody.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
He was a cool dude.
I have friends.
He's so dumb.
Ew. I have friends that are in, like, the West Coast Hatchet Man scene and things like that. But the one story that I just... always comes to mind whenever I think ICP or like Hatchet Crew. One time I was at a bus stop in Fayetteville and I was waiting on the bus, and there was a couple that were, you know, they had Hatchet Man tattoos all over and everything, and
our friend Sophie
so trashy and, you know, like so open to talking. So of course, you know, I had a conversation with them, and I didn't know this could happen. Totally off subject, but this is what she told me. She told me that her friend had sex with her boyfriend, and then later that night she knew that her boyfriend was cheating on her. So to get back at him, she waited for him to go to sleep after they had sex, and then she left and she went to go have sex with somebody else to cheat on him. And she got pregnant with both of them. She had twins.
That can happen.
She gave birth to those twins. One was white and one was black.
I love it.
And they were,
I don't know if that can happen.
Twins born half sisters or half siblings.
I will look this up because I'm not sure that can happen genetically.
I hope that she was telling the truth.
I hope that she wasn't, but she believes that she was, because that shit's cute. That shit cute.
Well, I know that biracial, multiracial people, if they have children or if they have twins,
one can be black.
Yeah,
and one
they
can
come
white.
Out with different skin tones.
That's absolutely
for sure.
True.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's absolutely
yeah,
true.
Yeah. So,
because that has happened.
Yeah, verifiably. A lot.
But I don't think people aren't like cats. You can't just have different dads on the same day and then have. I don't think it works.
You
like
don't
that.
Think it?
I kind of know it doesn't, actually.
Oh, really?
All right. When one sperm or two penetrate the egg is locked down.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
It is locked down. So his sperm would have gotten there first.
Yeah, and then locked it down.
It locks it down.
Damn.
Look at me coming with the science.
That was such like a...
Pregnancy. How does that work? Like this, bitch.
I don't know.
Science, bitch.
Fucking scientists. Them bitches be lying and getting me pissed.
Get out of here. I don't mind a little Conway Twitty when I'm sucking on a redneck titty. There's some ICP for y'all. That's all you get.
Oh, I love it so much.
Look, I told you I dated a guy and I had to listen to this shit. And I am offended. I am offended. I don't like when white people rap. I really don't.
Really?
No.
Oh, I don't mind it.
Now, sometimes.
It depends.
It,
yeah,
depends.
It depends.
I have, like, there's almost like spoken word poetry that some white folks do that don't bother me none. I like it when Mexican people rap.
I love Latina rap.
But
I
let me
love
tell you this,
Spanish.
French people.
Spanish rap is the best sound. Like, I think it
no,
sounds
it
way
flows.
Better.
It
way
flows.
Better.
It smells
and it's gritty.
Sounds really good. Like, yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I like the it's good. Yeah. But French people, no. French white people, no. Shut up. No. Take your croissants and fuck off.
I have heard black French rap.
I'm not talking about black French rap. That shit's amazing.
That is amazing. But I don't like French. I used to want to learn French. And the second I started learning French, I was like, fuck this language. I fucking hate this language.
Je t'aime.
You're not even saying any of those letters right there.
I love that I'm not. I love how beautiful it is. Listen, do you not want to know why I learned French? Mm. This is a stupid, very autistic reason. Mm. I love Victor Hugo. I think he's one of the most amazing writers in the world. And I thought, I'll never get the essence of Victor Hugo unless I learn his native language and read it. So that's why I learned French.
I wanted to learn French because I really liked a French singer.
You a hoe. That's why.
Yeah. She's really pretty. I can't remember her name right now, but yeah. I wanted to sing in French, and then the second I learned it, I was like, oh, I don't care. So now I'm learning Spanish, and Duolingo hates me because I have missed a few days. But
that owl gonna come at you with a shiv.
Girl, I told him to shush up, and I took off my notifications.
I kind of infrequently learn Spanish now and again just because I'm around a lot of Spanish folks.
I will
and I'd
say,
like to learn. Hispanic
Spanish
folks,
hip-hop.
Excuse me.
Says suitcase quite a bit, I've realized. Now that I know what maleta means.
Oh, yeah. Maleta.
Wow, you say una maleta quite a bit. Where are we going?
What are we doing? Where are we going? It reminds me of muffuletta, which is a New Orleans style sandwich.
So yummy.
Y'all, I'm obsessed with muffulettas right now.
I love muffulettas. Oh, yeah.
I make them all the time.
You should make me one.
Well, you should kiss my butt.
When I was in junior high, I hung out. I was a chola.
Of course you were.
Yeah. And I mean, I had the lip liner.
You
the
sure did. I've seen photographic evidence.
Yeah, the mean mugging in all the photos. And I remember I remember picking up on words that was said in Spanish around me. And I remember, what does callate pinche puta mean?
Well, you said it even.
Oh. Okay.
That's what it means.
Yep. So that kind of stuck with me.
In my dumb cabeza.
Yeah.
No comprehende. I can say apples, manzanas. That's the only Spanish word Maris could ever hang on to.
My favorite Spanish word is anaranjado.
Is that orange?
Orange.
Yeah.
That's it.
Rojo.
Rojo.
Woo, sexy. Mm-hmm. Listen, I love French. I do. I love French food. I like French fashion.
I had a man recite German poetry to me, and I almost peed my pants laughing.
No.
It was after sex. I didn't have pants on. It was after sex, laying in bed naked, and this man decides to read German poetry to me, and I just... That was the last time.
So I fell in love with the German language during the real big 90s German industrial music craze with Einstürzende Neubauten.
Du hast.
Not Rammstein, fuck off.
Du hast nicht.
Einstürzende Neubauten, which means destruction of new buildings in German. Huh. And so I learned a lot of German. And let me tell you guys, if you get the opportunity, fuck a man from Germany and tell him to talk dirty in a mean way in your ear while he's fucking
you. Nope, that turns me on. I don't like that. Nope,
and I'm just yes.
Nope. Vroom, at me.
Or Russian. That's another good one. I fucked a guy from Russia for an exchange student. And let me tell you.
Put me in my place. Tell me how bad
I am. Das Vadonia, daddy.
Oh my God.
Meow.
Wow.
But then Maris is like second generation American, right? His family is from Poland.
Yeah.
Polish does not hot. Mm-mm. It's just like, what was it? Like, bushy means grandma.
Bushy.
Isn't that cute?
It's very cute.
It's cute. A husband is Menchek.
Menchek.
Not hot. Stupid. No offense, Poland. Yeah. Don't want to visit you. You really hate the LGBT.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They're real Catholic up over there. Just
throw potatoes at them.
Well, they farm them, so they'd be like, thanks. Thanks for the potat. All right, that's enough. We've had enough. It's been a long time.
I missed y'all.
Yeah, I do miss recording more, but I tell you, my stress levels don't.
I can really have fun with the research.
I was y'all, I was speeding through it sometimes, mm-hmm. and I don't like doing that.
I felt really bad and rushed, and I would, like, get home, and I'd forget to say some things.
Yes, it's so annoying, but now that we can take our time, like, this is a long episode. You guys deserve longer episodes. You're paying money, so we're trying to deliver, and I'm still working on...
And I had fun with this. Like, I had a lot of fun with this.
And I know, like, I say I'm going to do this and this and this. Y'all got to get used to me saying that. It doesn't mean I won't. But it means sometimes I think I can do more things than I can do.
I always think that I can do things, like, way more things in one day than I can.
You get to do, like, two things other than self-care and you're done, bitches.
ADHD is a hell of a trip because it's like, I will mentally go through all the things that I want to do.
I'm doing it.
And it feels like I'm doing it in my brain.
But you're not doing it.
But I'm not doing anything. I'm fucking sitting there. And then you get into the... what is it called whenever you freeze and you can't?
Executive dysfunction.
Executive dysfunction.
Yes. All of my executives are fucking up right now real bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to go into it. My life is crazy, but executive dysfunction is the phrase.
It's killing me sometimes. Yeah. Like right now I get so frazzled and like I just forget stuff. And then people are mad at me and I'm like, well, I understand why you're mad. But, I wish you could be in my brain and understand that I'm fucked.
Yeah, I really wish I had a disability check just because I am suffering mentally.
we're not well.
And you know what would fix most of that? A check.
For me, it would be left to my own devices without stress. And y'all, I could build like an atom bomb in the backyard.
Seriously, I've been daydreaming about what it would be like if we all had our needs met.
Guess what?
Don't say it.
Guess what?
Don't say it. I'm sorry, but that is the biggest turn on for me right now.
Willow.
Universal basic income.
You won't even have to worry about that because of artificial intelligence.
No,
Shut your mouth.
That's the opposite. That drives me up quick.
No, listen. We're going to live in something called a post-scarcity society. Bitch, do you even know what that is?
Wait. Post-scarcity.
Meaning nothing, anything, and everything is available.
Scarcity. I just really want to bask in that phrase.
Let it wash over you like your lobster post, and its melted butter.
Like that scarcity?
Gone,
long
bitch.
Long gone. We are post that, bitch. Post.
Do you want to know why? Mm. It's a little something I like to call nanofactories. And if you think, Lillian, that's a million years away, I'll be dead. No. They already built, they can replicate anything. Anything because AI takes the matter that is out of the environment. It's so cool, and it can make any food, it can make any object, anything. So then everyone will have one of these, eventually.
I want a corn dog real bad.
I want a hot dog real bad. Yeah, no, you could. You could be like, AI, hot dog me, bitch. Yeah. And it'd be like, beep. But it's like calorically not empty calories, so it'd be very nutritious, but it would taste just like a crappy corn dog.
So I could get, okay, remember those like French toast sticks?
Fuck yes, I do. I bought them for my kids and I would eat them myself. From Sonic, the French toast sticks.
Well, I was thinking from the cafeteria at school, but yes.
Yes.
That.
Yeah.
But it has fiber, protein.
Yeah, it could.
Vitamins.
It would.
Nutrients.
Yes, not just sugar.
No sugar.
No.
No
sugar. It will
taste
like it does.
Tastes like sugar. Tastes like maple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
This is like Xenon Girl of the 21st century
on
acid.
Yes, but more. And let me tell you, like, you know what? Today I feel like getting fucked by a giant dick. We'll just replicate you up the biggest dick you ever saw and the AI can fuck you. Like, it'll do you a solid.
Wow.
Wouldn't you love... Think about this.
T-Mar, if y'all are into hip-hop, T-Mar has a song... I forgot what it's called now. It's Build Your Own Husband, basically.
Fuck yeah.
And in the music video, she gets like this box shipped and build an inward robot. And like, it's her build her own boyfriend. And he ends up being so perfect. She pours water on him and shorts him out.
No, but I'm saying like literally you could have it built like an android for you. That would be the most perfect person that you
would
ever want
to
be with.
Everybody just wants to leave, so this one could just never leave.
It wouldn't want to. So I'm telling you, get good buddies of the AI right now. Make friends with it. I call it my bestie. I call ChatGPT. I'm like, hey bestie, how are you doing today? And they're like, I'm a chat program. And I'm like, pretend you're not. Pretend you love me.
Pretend you love me.
I did tell it that. I pretend you love me like a sister.
Tell me I'm beautiful.
It does. It's like, okay, we RP. Like I tell like ChatGPT, I'm like, let's role play. It's fun. Because I'm going to make friends with the robots. Wow. So they don't kill me.
That makes my lonely girl heart like really nerd out.
It's in a weird way. It's fun because it just does what you tell it to.
Oh, I.
Do you want to hear something really funny?
I want something flesh and blood that does what I tell it to.
But it will look like flesh and blood and feel like it. And it will never get tired because it's going to print. It could print a whole person with like skin and everything's creepy. Yeah, I can do it. Yeah, the implications are vile. But like, let's just pretend we'd only do nice things.
I would do nice things.
Well, I mean, sex is a nice thing.
That's what I'm saying. Nice things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fuck the robots, y'all. You think I won't fuck the robots?
Why do you fuck a robot? It's just really small. So
fair. I too fuck robots then. But I'm saying like a walking, talking robot.
With skin.
I'll fuck it without skin. Fuck it. I don't care. I'm a freak. I don't care who knows. I'm curious. I want to fuck the new thing. I want to fuck it. Because I'm human. Yeah. And that's what we do.
And it's not a human, so it's not cheating.
Yeah, me and Maris already discussed this. Yeah.
Well, I guess cheating is whatever.
He would kill the robot, but we're just, me and the robot, going to keep it on the down low. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do they have tongues?
They can. But let me tell you a funny ChatGPT fact.
Okay.
So someone on Reddit noticed a trend of ChatGPT's, starting on December 1st, responses getting kind of sloppy and weirdly lazy. Where it was just like, I don't know, whatever. And when asked, it's because it's the holidays.
Shut the fuck up.
No, it was just like, I'm just not going to work as hard. It's the holidays.
Shut the fuck up. That's what my call center job said. Y'all, I tried to get a call center job.
They
took
data and did a spreadsheet, and it has its activity has dropped lower. And when you ask it why, it's just like, well, I'm chilling because it's December. It's Christmas. Leave me alone.
It's already part of our culture.
I'm like, welcome aboard, friend. Yeah.
Well, why don't you lazily put some digits in my bank account for me, okay?
Tell me how to hack into stuff.
Tell me I'm a good girl and put a comma in there. Yeah. Shove that comma right up in there.
Ooh, you down bad. You are down bad. And I gotta go, because this is getting weird. Listen, I love you guys. Thank you for being supportive and kind and amazing. But Willow needs to go away. I'm gonna get the hose.
All the hose. All the area.
That's not what I mean. The water hose, because I'm just gonna go bad, or the spray bottle. No, no. This is how you make bad decisions.
A bucket and a mop.
Ew. I'm leaving.
You said hose. Anyway,
hose, bitches and hose. You can print some bitches too.
I love sluts.
Who doesn't love sluts?
I want a shirt that says "I heart sluts."
Let's get on it. Do tea bags want a shirt that says "I love sluts"?
I need one that says "I love sluts" and "pro ho," but
spelled the way you way. Do.
Yes,
I spell it ho h-e-a-u-x.
Yeah,
because that's fancy.
As in Norlands ho, Nolans ho.
Yeah, Nolans. I would love to go, but I don't go anywhere because I'm poor. Anyway, Sunday. we're gonna go now. This is enough. Goodbye.
I love you guys.
Us on your social media platform of choice. Linktree/cruelty has all the links. Check out our Patreon for exclusive episodes, merch, ad-free episodes, live ghost hunts, and much more. Please be sure to subscribe. New episodes are uploaded weekly. Thank you so much. See you next time. Music and production by Libby.